Soyoung Chu teaches English at Queen's College, City University of New York. She's also the author of Do Metaphors Dream of Literal Sleep? A Science Fictional Theory of Representation. Most of us think of science fiction as a genre that imagines places and things which don't really exist. But in her book, Chu argues that science fiction actually does refer to reality, that it's a kind of high-intensity realism. She uses such examples as war trauma, cyberspace in the 1990s, and robot rights to bolster her argument.
The globalized world, that's another example of a cognitively estranging referent that we often approach metaphorically. Spaceship Earth, global village, time-space compression. When we use such figures of speech, we don't actually mean that planet Earth is a spaceship. But in science fiction, we find such metaphors powerfully and really effectively literalized in ways that make globalization available for narrative experience to the reader or to the watcher if it's a film.
You also explore the subject of post-memory Han in your book. What is post-memory Han?
To explain post-memory Han, I should probably explain each term individually. Post-memory, the term post-memory, was coined by Marianne Hirsch in her book Family Frames, where she notes that children of Holocaust survivors often, quote-unquote, remember a tragedy that they didn't experience firsthand. So Hirsch uses this powerful term, post-memory, to designate this form of intergenerational memory, whereby the experience remembered is both literal and figurative. It's real and yet virtual. It's intimately familiar and yet obviously secondhand. It's present tense. It feels current, and yet it is objectively something that happened long ago.
And maybe even to someone else.
Right. And I actually found myself thinking about this concept of post-memory in connection to Korean-American writers who write about remembering what their parents or grandparents went through during the Korean War, during the Japanese occupation. So I suppose post-memory Han could be defined as the Korean-American form of post-memory. Han, by the way, is a word with no equivalent in English. It refers to a Korean form of grief.
You talk about some of the Korean texts, some of the Korean fiction that's been written. Is any of this science fiction?
Absolutely. For example, in Teresa Hakim Cha's autobiography, Dictée, Cha invokes post-memory Han by figuring herself as this bionic telepath who recalls distant events such as her mother's near-death experience while exiled in Manchuria, with photographic exactness. And in this collection of poems by Suji Kwok Kim, it's called Notes from the Divided Country, Kim renders post-memory Han, this cognitively estranging referent, available for representation by describing it science fictionally as a genetic condition that's, you know, made of chromosomes. Her parents' Han-filled memories permeated her own body while she was inside her mother's womb. And thus, in Kim's science fictional account of post-memory Han, the Japanese occupation, the Korean War, neither of which she experienced firsthand, have become part of her DNA. Obviously, that's not literally true, but in this science fictional poetry, the reader gets this rich, sensuous, vivid sense of the ways in which events that weren't experienced by the lyric speaker can still seem to be so much a part of the speaker's body. It's as though these events have inscribed themselves into her DNA.
You wrote about one of her poems called Generation. And in fact, you quote a couple of stanzas from it. Would you mind reading a little bit of it for us?
Oh, not at all. This is a stanza in which Sujikwa Kim uses this really lush organic imagery to describe her experiences as an embryo growing in her mother's body. I entered the labyrinth of mother's body. I wandered through nerve forests, branching in every direction, towering trees fired by feeling, crackling and smoldering. I rode through vein rivers. I splashed in lymph creeks between islands of glands. I leapt rib to rib, rung to rung on the spine. I swung from the ropes of entrails. I played on organs, leapt through a fog of sweet oxygen in the lungs. I clambered over tectonic plates of the skull, scrambling not to fall down the chasms between the mind mountains where I could see no bottom. I peered through sockets at the brain brewing in cliffs of bone, like a gigantic volcano with its magma of memories, magma of tomorrows. I could have played there forever, watching, wondering at the vast expanses inside, wondering at the great chambers of the heart.
You know, I never thought of poetry as science fiction, or using the two forms together, but they really belong together, don't they? That is science fiction.
Oh, absolutely. And not just because the lyric speaker here is invoking science fictional imagery, such as, you know, a magma of tomorrows. I mean, one of the arguments that I make in the introduction, well, actually throughout the book, is that science fiction and lyric poetry are intimately interconnected. That's probably the most counterintuitive claim that I make in this book.
Well, actually, there's another poem that people may know and have no association with science fiction. You quote an Emily Dickinson poem.
Yes,
in the book.
I do.
And in fact, would you read a little bit of that? I Felt a Funeral.
Absolutely.
In My Brain. That would be great.
I'd love to read the entire poem if that's
okay. Oh, please, go ahead.
Okay. I felt a funeral in my brain and mourners to and fro. Kept treading, treading, till it seemed that sense was breaking through. And when they all were seated, a service like a drum kept beating, beating, till I thought my mind was going numb. And then I heard them lift a box and creak across my soul with those same boots of lead again. Then space began to toll, as all the heavens were a bell and being but an ear, and I and silence, some strange race, wrecked, solitary, here. And then a plank in reason broke, and I dropped down and down, and hit a world at every plunge, and finished knowing then.
You know, you don't have to call it science fiction to enjoy it, but it is science fiction, isn't it?
It is. The voice here is to me, it's a post-apocalyptic voice. It's otherworldly. It's speaking from some dimension beyond human time. The lyric speaker, she's speaking from a place that one might even describe as alien. She's no longer a part of the human race. Instead, she and silence constitute some strange race, wrecked, solitary here, stranded in some kind of void. I've always thought of this poem as science fictional. I mean, I remember vividly the first time I read this poem.
Yeah, I wonder, thinking about Emily Dickinson, whether the term science fiction had any existence at the time she wrote it, and I guess whether or not it did, what she would think of your use of it in relation to her poem.
Oh, gosh.
She'd probably be pleased.
I would love to have a conversation with her. about science fiction. You know, it's interesting. There's a growing subgenre, it seems to me, of science fiction novels and short stories in which Emily Dickinson is a science fictional character. In one story, for example, she's abducted by aliens and then she returns to Earth. Her head is filled with poetry, with otherworldly poetry. And then she writes all of her poems in the aftermath of that alien experience. I think maybe the reason for this growing subgenre is there's something so otherworldly about her voice.
So-young Chu is the author of Do Metaphors Dream of Literal Sleep, a science fictional theory of representation.